Oh, okay.
Right. Actually, you know, when they describe the world ages and the system of eons and everything like that, it's been degenerating a long time.
Yeah.
And so what it means is that kind of the pollution that leads to early death is increasing, that sentient beings, unruly, violent minds are getting more violent, that people's wrong views are getting more elaborate and more widely publicized, you know, that harmony is definitely getting left behind. It just means, you know, I mean, that we live in a society with a lot of problems. Yeah? Yeah, but see, this is all one age. Yeah? This is, you know, from medieval times to now. Yeah, that was also degenerate. Yeah. They say actually now it's worse now than at the time of the Buddha, but still that was a degenerate age also then. Well, I don't think there's any scientific evidence. You just have to go on, you know, what it says in the scriptures as to the kinds of qualities and capabilities you have when you've been able to completely purify your mind and totally develop all your good qualities. And so, I mean, we're very, very limited beings in what we're capable of doing, but if you look at our mind, our minds are also very defiled, and our good qualities aren't developed. So if we could kind of, you know, imagine, well, what would it be like, what kind of qualities of mind would it be possible to have if you've gotten your mind to the state where you never, ever, ever again get angry or annoyed or attached or jealous, you know? I mean, kind of your mind's going to have some special qualities and capabilities. So in the scriptures it says that, you know, as you develop on the stage, you develop some of these more, I guess you could call magical or things that are super normal. In other words, these people don't have normal states of mind, so what they can physically and verbally do isn't limited to what we ordinary beings are capable of doing, too. In terms of scientific evidence, that's difficult, you know. But I think it's just something if we can try and think of, you know, in that way of what it must be like to have a really pure and developed mind, then, well, yeah, you're going to have more talent, more ability to do that. Yeah? I mean, if we think of just a person who has some ability in meditation, you being able to meditate at the time of death. I mean, that's an incredible ability just to even guide their rebirth and what they're going to appear as. You know, we can't do that now, but we can really see how that could be possible. I mean, it could be possible to eliminate the craving in our mind so we can die and in some way guide our own rebirth. So then you kind of take it from there as to the kinds of qualities that are possible to develop with a pure mind, and these qualities are talked about in the scriptures, so... You know, you can accept it provisionally and think about it in the way I just described, and then try out the path for yourself and then see if you can do it when you gain those realizations. Helping? Okay. This is a very good question. You know, if you're somehow holding the teacher higher, how do you have equanimity for everybody in the group? And this, again, is, I think, a point that many people in the West miss, okay? Because it's like the teacher becomes very special and everybody else is just flaky, yeah? And I think that here you have to really see that somebody who has high realizations, what is it that they cherish the most? They cherish other beings. I mean, bodhisattvas, Buddhists, they cherish other beings more than they cherish themselves. So if we're going to respect bodhisattvas and Buddhas, and if we're going to see our teacher as a realized being, then definitely we should try and value the thing that's most important to them, which is other beings, which is everybody else. Yeah. So being all nice and sugary sweet and pleasant and wonderful and courteous and helpful to your teacher and completely obnoxious and disrespectful and greedy in regards to other sentient beings is completely contradictory to what we should be trying to develop in our practice.
And could that be a thing?
I don't know if it's as serious an error, because still, by keeping a good relationship with your teacher, you're opening your mind to eventually coming around to the point that respecting your teacher means respecting other beings. Whereas if you throw away the relationship with your teacher, you're throwing away, a lot of that possibility to eventually come to that conclusion. So I don't think it would be quite as serious. But, and it's a very common mistake because you can see it in the scriptures. Like, that, I remember there's this one story about, anything related to your teacher is very precious. I mean, your teacher's dog you should treat with incredible respect, because this is your teacher's dog and your teacher's family. Anything related to your teacher you should just treat with utmost respect. Yeah. And so many people get into this whole thing of, the guru's dog is, just so precious, and, petting it and stroking it and praising the guru's dog. But they forget that all the other people around them are the guru's other disciples. So they're really nasty and mean and competitive to all their Dharma friends. Because they forget that these people are also, who your spiritual teacher cares about. Yeah. So this is, is something that, and again, I think this comes sometimes from the way the teachings are presented, because we're taught so much that anything related to your spiritual teacher is like so high. And the idea, the whole point of that teaching is, again, just to help us see somebody's qualities so we follow the teachings better. But we misinterpret it to get into this whole ollie ollie salami devotion trip. That misses the whole point of of love and compassion as being what the whole thing's about. So that's a very good question. Okay. So because in the West we're exposed to such a wide variety of teachers and teachings, it seems really easy for us to go from one to the next. And yet here in the teachings it seems to be really emphasizing having a relationship with a steady relationship. Mm-hmm. With a particular teacher or teachers, but something steady and concentrated. And here in the West, it's a very different thing, because you're with your teacher for 4 days every other year, and then you're with another teacher for another 4 days, another teacher for another 4 days. So what does it mean to have a relationship with a teacher? Well, this again is where we come to the thing of really, we can go to people's teachings, we can learn from them, but accepting that person as our teacher is a different thing. Okay? So you can go and learn from many traditions, many people, but, some tradition that really clicks with you, or some person that you really inspires you, after you've checked things out, then you kind of make your decision, that person's my teacher. Now, you may have made that decision about several people. That's okay. It doesn't mean that everybody you go to and listen to teachings from becomes your teacher. Okay? If you take refuge, if you take precepts, if you take initiation from somebody, then they become your teacher. So that's why you should check before you do these things. Okay? But otherwise, you're free to go and learn from a wide variety of people. But then when something kind of really hits you on a deeper note, whether that person's around all the time or not, if you feel like a real heartfelt connection with them and like their way of teaching and their approach, that particular tradition, then kind of try and stay steady in that. And in the West, it's true, we're exposed to many, many different traditions. So I think it's good that maybe you find one particular approach that really suits you well. You use that as your mainline thing, and you can go to other teachers and other things, and that becomes like ornaments or decorations on your basic practice. And that's much better, having a solid thing that you do and the other things add on to it. That's very, very good. Whereas somebody who, you know, Monday night, you know, does breathing meditation, and Tuesday night does Dzogchen, and Wednesday night does Mahamudra, and Thursday night does Tonglen, and Friday night goes to a medium, they're not going to get anywhere. Yeah, whereas, you know, you kind of make some stability, something, and some direction, you know, and a connection with a particular teacher. And then you can always write to them, you know, that person if they're not around. But it's something you can take your time in forming.
It seems when you, when I was thinking about teachers, that actually kind of get it from something
and not from others. Right, right. And that has, yeah, right. And that has a lot to do with our own disposition and our karma. Yeah, so we have to select what is appropriate for us. That doesn't mean it's the best thing or the best teacher for everybody. Okay, and it comes back to the whole thing. On a buffet dinner, I like rice, you like potatoes, but I can't say, rice is better because I like it. Yeah, if you're nourished by potatoes, fine. Yeah, but if potatoes don't get along with my digestive system, then I have to eat rice, but that's okay. Yeah? Okay, this will be the last question.
Transmission of enlightenment.
Yeah, so what does it really mean to be inspired by the Buddhas? Does it mean something conceptual, or does it mean something non-conceptual, and what's really going on?
Conceptual stuff's going on.
That depends, you know, whether, why there's the conceptual stuff, something else going on. That depends very much on our mind, the teacher's ability, and our karmic relationship with that person. Yeah? Because if you go to a teaching, you know, there might be 1,000 people in a teaching, and one person's going to go out and say, wow, what an incredible teaching, that completely opened my mind. And somebody else is going to go out and say, oh, it's so boring, I didn't get anything. Yeah? Now that is a reflection of people's karma and people's disposition. So a lot of it depends on us.
So insofar as that does happen?
They say that, you know, receiving the blessing or the inspiration of the Buddha means our mind is getting transformed. And that means somehow that we're at the point from doing some purification or from whatever, that our mind is receptive to transformation. So there might be some, there might be the conceptual teachings coming from the Buddha. There might be just the whole energy from that person coming. But somehow our mind is really ready and ripe at that time. Yeah, so something clicks. And so receiving this has a lot to do with how we see that person. Yeah? So again, you know, if you see that person as an idiot, you're completely closing off all your ability to tune into whatever it is they're trying to convey, conceptually or non-conceptually. Whereas if you try and have, you know, a really a positive view of that person, seeing them with qualities, then your own mind's going to be more receptive to communicate verbally and non-verbally. Yeah, let's digest.